The scripture reading today is from Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 10 to 14. When you go to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God delivers them into your hands, and you take captives, if you notice among the captives a beautiful woman and are attracted to her, you may take her as your wife. Bring her into your home and have her shave her head and trim her nails and put aside the clothes she was wearing when captured. After she's lived in your house and mourned for her father and mother for a full month, then you may go to her and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. If you're not pleased with her, let her go wherever she wishes. You must not sell her or treat her as a slave, since you have dishonored her. This is the word of the Lord.
Okay. Okay. Some of you might be experiencing now what I would call the shock of the old. We have here a law in the book of Deuteronomy. You've just heard this law read, and it is so culturally distant from us that you might just be left here just blinking your eyes. In fact, I went through these laws because I've been telling us to read these scriptures as we go along, and I wanted to find a law that was so culturally distant, that was so profoundly strange to us. Why did I do such a thing? Why did I choose this one? Well, I'm doing it for a reason. It's strange. I would take something like this. It's not like I have a long tenure here. This kind. I've been here just about a year. You certainly don't want to make yourself unpopular at this time. But I wanted to do this because I wanted to lay this out for you, to prove something to you, that this is good stuff here. That I wanted to lay this out so you could think, start to see how Moses thought, actually how God thinks. This is a judicial law. It's a case law. And I just want to explain something a little bit to start out to help us understand there's a distinction and there are two types of laws that we find in this covenant. One are our pronouncement laws. You shall do this. You shall not do that. And we saw last week, we saw the fundamental ones there in the 10 words, the 10 commandments. But there's another kind of law that goes like this. If this is the situation, if this happens, then do this. It's a case law. It's more like a judicial ruling. And it shows us how actually the community got its laws. There were some pronouncements. There were some principles that were put forward. But also, and this is the genius of it, is that we are given laws that show us how to apply those principles over time. And we're coming into a new situation here. This was not a law that was recorded in the initial covenant back on Sinai. This was something that was new to this covenant renewal time, but it was showing us how to apply something in a new situation. The situation was where there was going to be a situation of war. And there's a new cultural situation. What to be done? And a lot of times these new situations came up. Moses, either because he knew the heart of God, would say, okay, we'll do this in this situation. If this arises, we'll do this. Sometimes he really didn't feel like he knew what to do, so he would go to God and say, well God, what do we do in this situation? He felt at a loss, and God would help him and give his judgments. So this is a situation that was taking place there. And what we see in this passage here is that God is a very practical God. Okay, God's wisdom, his love is entirely practical. This book, this covenant community life, is not a pie-in-the-sky ideal that does not deal with people where they are. And I hope that you can see as we go through this from the way that God and Moses worked with these people in their culture, that you can see how far God will go in dealing with you in your culture. Because I know you think this in some of your current circumstances, that you have, well, these current circumstances that I have, or your current technology, or your current philosophical milieu, just renders you separate from the wisdom of God, that it's not something that God can address, your situation. There is not a circumstance, folks, there is not a mess from which his loving wisdom cannot guide you. It would be a grave misjudgment for you to think that, oh, well, you know, the church is a place where people have just normal problems. Not like mine, okay? Mine are special. There's no solution to the problems in my life. There's no way out. The Bible has no answers for me. No, preacher, you can't talk to me about my problems because, well, you know, the decisions that my parents have made have crippled me. Decisions that I've made have put me in quicksand. There's nowhere to go but down. The conditions of modern life make happiness impossible for me. You don't understand, preacher, what, you know, my situation. My apartment has burned, and I did not have renter's insurance. So, therefore, you know, that's just a black hole from which there's no escape. All these different things we're saying are saying, really, that the wisdom and love of God is not practical enough for me. So look with me at this practical love of God, and even if it is not addressing your particular situation, garner hope for yours. It's not too much of a mess for him to do something beautiful thereby. And to look at this, we have to first put it again in the context of this thing we called holy war. We looked at this a few weeks ago, just to do this quickly, again, to remind you that in this campaign that the Israelites were bringing into this land of Canaan, the holy war distinguished between people groups, and how each one was treated was wrapped up in God's rightful condemnation or lack thereof. We saw that God wouldn't fight a people unless they were doing something worse than what war would do. So the woman in this particular passage is not coming out of this nice, innocent society. And we saw also that holy war depended very much on people's reaction to what God was doing, to the response of the Kingdom of Heaven program. He had a place that he was setting up, the Kingdom of God, and people's response to what was going on determined what happened and the manner in which the war was conducted. Just reading recently in Joshua 11, where it says certain people, they were wiped out by Joshua. Their hearts were hardened against what was going on. Except for a certain group, their hearts weren't hardened. They made peace. There was a peace treaty involved. So what we see that there were instances of annihilation in holy war. There were instances of making peace and preservation of a people. And there were all these conditions in between. So this particular law is addressing a situation in which there were certain situations that ended up with captives, where non-combatants were protected. So there ended up being women and children and so forth coming into the culture. And what we have here is a situation that would result in the incorporation of these people over several generations. And there was these times when you just had captives in their midst, that you had a mixture of peoples. What does that create? Well, it creates a situation in which you have a mingling between clearly male soldiers and women who have been part of this defeated people. So let me just go through the passage once more. We've heard it read, and I want to explain how I want to read what it's actually saying before we say what it means. Okay, so let's go through this. First, to read this passage well, You have to read it in the context of the 10 words, in the context of the 10 commandments. You have to read it in the foundation of the 7th commandment. Adultery is forbidden, okay, in Israel. There are no sexual relations out of wedlock permitted here, okay? Here's how it worked. A soldier sees one of these women captives, and he wants her. He cannot have her, but there is a possibility that he will get her. He just has to go through a small, easy ritual. Okay, what is a month to a man's passion? She must shave her head. Okay, and yes, this is clearly, folks, a disgrace. She is humbled by this procedure, no doubt about it. She's disgraced by being bald. He dishonors her in that way. She has to cut her nails short. And whatever it is that she was wearing when the soldier decided he wanted her, she has to change out of that into normal clothes. So she's bald in common dress with short nails. Then he must allow her to come into his home, the soldier. She gets to see everything from what kind of home he keeps, his personal hygiene, to how much money he has, everything. During this time, you see, everything is provided for her. Absolutely nothing is required of her. She may act however she wishes during this time, and that is key. The mourning that they're talking about in the passage may be the death of the women's parents in the war, but it may also simply point to her removal from her parents' home. This seems to be a time of Israelites mourning, but the length of that period, but you see much more is going on here in this time. At the end of this time, the man has to make a decision. Does he want to spend the rest of his life with this woman or not? He makes this decision before the consummation. He either marries her and they become husband and wife, or she is allowed untouched now with a wedge cut, I guess, if, after this amount of time, to go out, to go wherever. And this is phrased at this point to express the broadest possible terms of freedom for this woman. She either, now she's lived among the Israelites and sees what kind of society, this society of Yahweh, is all about, and sees the laws here that are preoccupied with justice and mercy and concern for dignity of women and so forth, she can decide to join Yahweh, set up her own tent in their midst, perhaps marry someone else, make her way among this society, or not, or to go if there are other occurrences to relatives or other places. Broadest possible terms of freedom that she can do. Now, if you think that this is a harsh law, if you think that this is just harsh and ridiculous, I want you to consider the alternative. What you had here is a situation in which there were a large number of clearly male conquerors and clearly conquered female captives. And women here were in an extremely vulnerable position. Extremely vulnerable. And the men were coming out of a culture, coming out of a general attitude in the ancient Near East in which conquered people were scum. They were just scum. You had a right to do with whatever you wanted to do with conquered people. Right made might, and that was the governing ethic outside of Israel. That's what they were coming out of. Now, the cultural situation there was not right, but how do you change it? How do you address it? How do you enact a law that is able to bring these people out of where they are? Do you enact a law that so just says denies people anything about what they're used to, and so that such that they despise it and laugh it out of enforcement? Or do you enact an enforceable law that guides rightful desires into their proper course, that allows for racial integration over generations, promotes a true understanding of marriage, and in the process demonstrates that justice and goodness are cool. What do you do? You know, last week, we didn't go into it, but we saw that Moses urged the Israelites to attend to this law for the sake of the peoples around them in Deuteronomy 4. Essentially, you know, for evangelism, because the law would generally lead them into a wise and happy life, even in the midst of difficulties. And when you can live a happy and wise life, folks, it's a megaphone into your friends' lives, into your neighbors' lives. They may laugh at you, they may deride you, they may say all sorts of things about you as a Christian, but they will listen to your life. They'll say anything, but they'll listen to your life. And Moses says, do this so that others who do not believe as you do, but are looking at your life, may see God's wisdom. So what is going on here? You have a young soldier who has a desire, a sexual desire for a woman. And folks, you should see underlying this, in this law, that sexual desire is not bad. It's God-given. It's encouraged. Yes, that desire can lead you into evil. Yes, there are a lot of things that are wrong. And if you're tied up with a lot of bondage in this area, if you are in bondage to pornography, you might be a difficulty seeing how this sexual desire is something that's good. But you have to see here the nobility of a sexual desire is affirmed here. But it's got to be guided. So what do you see going on? There's a lot happening in verse 13. Consider this with me. Look at each side. You think of the woman. When a spouse is mourning a family member, I think those of you who've gone through this, this grief creates a world in a lot of cases where the other spouse cannot enter. Such grief can create a distance if you're not in that family. And there's especially a distance created if you're being confronted daily with part of the reason you're grieving in the other person. So what we have here is a woman who has got to enter in to the righteousness of what was going on and a forgiveness. Or she's got to stew in resentment as she lives in this soldier's home. A similar situation came up like this, was portrayed in a popular media recently in Tom Cruise's The Last Samurai. It's a different situation there because the soldier was looked like was wrongfully the aggressor. But the widow of the man that Tom Cruise killed was required to take him into her home and live with him. You saw these scenes where she was dealing with this forgiveness or struggling with this. So that's a woman. On the other side, the man is also being tested. Because young husbands, you certainly know this. Young husbands are most tried when they are called upon to care while receiving nothing in return. Isn't that true, dear young husbands? For example, it's always an adjustment when the baby comes. Because suddenly it's the baby's needs, the baby's wants that are important, that are central. The husband's no longer at the center, and he must care, and he must provide, sometimes without physical relations, without affections. His love is tested at those times. So both soldier and captive are tested during this month. It's essentially a forced engagement, but it's not like any engagement that we would design. It's a forced engagement in which the character of both parties are being exposed. Hers in the midst of ugliness and resentment. His while being required to provide sustenance and compassion to her when he was getting nothing in return. And each one could see what the other one was like to live with in that case. In that circumstance. What do you think of this engagement plan? Drew? Think this is the way to go? It's tough. But look at what goes on in the process. See, they did not have the advantage, these people, of growing up because of this circumstance the Holy War created, of being these peoples tossed together, very different peoples, different cultures. They didn't have the advantage of growing up in a covenant community in which their families could know each other over a long period of time. Instead, they got a crash course. And folks, I hope you understand enough about people to understand what's going on here. If he didn't like what he was seeing, he had a few weeks to go to end it. And if she didn't like what she saw, well, let me ask you, how do you think she was going to act, knowing that in a few weeks he was going to decide about whether to spend the rest of his life with her or not? There are ways, you know, of making it very clear what life would be like, aren't there? And during this whole process, the rights and dignity of the conquered woman would be kept intact. Now, what do we learn here? Two small things, well, three things, let's say. We learn, first of all, that from this passage, God's Old Testament covenant community was not about maintaining racial purity. Okay, it's often misrepresented. That's why that's not what it was about. Aliens were to be brought in, if possible, so long that it was made clear that Yahweh is God, that Yahweh is the conqueror, and there is none else. And loyalty to him was not negotiable. That's the first thing we learn. And folks, we can bring that forward to us today because you should have the same attitude. We are not in the midst of holy war anymore. That was for a specific time period that had a beginning and an end. And the way that Christ is extending his kingdom now is by you. And the way that you behave. It's through you being aware of those around you who right now might hate God and making provision for them in your lives to come into their midst, into our midst, if they would. And that you make provision every day of the week. You make provision on Sunday when you go downstairs and decide who to talk to. You make provision during the week in the way you conduct yourselves with your neighbors and your friends. That's the way holy war is progressing, quote unquote, in Christ's kingdom. But secondly, it teaches us something about what marriage is about. You see what Moses and God did. They were intent upon guiding people out of an unjust cultural practice of just treating captives however they wanted. And through the process, these soldiers were learning what marriage was about. Because you want to know what marriage comes down to? It comes down to precisely this. How do you treat each other when you are at your worst? This was a crash course in what it would be like when the infatuation was over. Now, just think about how this would affect, you know, a young, proud young stag who went through this a few times. Go ahead, go through these battles. Shave a head, shave another head. Can't touch her until you commit. Now, after a few of these, even the roughest would have to begin to understand. Understand what? Well, understand marriage, yes. But further, thirdly, understand what love is. You see, God had a further goal here than in this law than just ensuring justice for the alien young woman. It was to teach the Israel soldier something in his life. Because as he went through this process, he was supposed to learn something. What was it? Well, folks, take a look at what he was called on to do. He had to love someone when she was at her worst, bald and perhaps resentful. He had to care while getting nothing in return. so that she knew that if he could care for her like this, he would always take care of her. And that love was going to transform her into a bride, in the best cases, who would receive him as a husband, who would want to receive him as a husband. Okay, he had to love someone when she was at her worst. He had to care while getting nothing in return, and that love was going to transform her into a bride who would receive him. See, it was a little play. It was a little drama. Does this remind you of anyone? God was trying to use a gritty circumstance of soldier life and severe ancient Near East culture to get something across about himself, about his love for his people. He was loving Israel at their worst, and that love would so transform some of them that they would transform them into those who would marry their hearts to him. And friends, that was happening in Israel in that sense, in a full way. We see the fulfillment of this kind of love in Jesus Christ. What did he do? He came specifically to love humanity while humanity is at the worst, angry at God, resistant to his kingdom, thoroughly rejecting him. And Jesus gave his life for those who hated him, like maybe you. And those of you who now know him know you used to hate him. And how his love called to you repeatedly, incessantly, for a lot longer than a month. You know, the soldier had to endure for a month. Christ has endured with you, many of you, a lot longer. And that was to teach you. That was to teach you something. That was to teach you that when you were at your worst this past week, you need to know that Christ was loving you. Christ's love has persevered over you. And this coming week, when you are at your worst, he is persevering in the engagement. If he did this while you were bald, ugly, and hating him, what can you do now to remove yourself from his love? That's the real story. In fact, he pursued you and paid for you while you were an enemy so that you could always depend on his love. He did it specifically for that reason. Apostle Paul says, "For if while we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life?" That is, because of what he did and what we were like while he did it, we know a lot about how attentive he is to us now, how effective his work is in our lives, how far his love expands and extends. Let us go now to the communion table.